Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at the Avenue in downtown Milwaukee, it's time to Fast Forward. Welcome to the future of almost everything in Wisconsin on the upswing. Presented by Oricon Bank, the natural choice for all your banking needs. Joining WTMJ's Jeff Sherman, here's Martin Moore.
Good morning, Wisconsin. Good morning, Milwaukee. The future of almost everything right here on the upswing. Commerce and community analysis on local and national business issues. Unique technology takes and trends. Important news you can use. Today, we're here in the present, but we're going to give you a little view into the future. That's what we do on Thursdays here on the upswing. First, two up. Two business headlines that I'm seeing that you need to know about right now. Country Club to Office Park in Kenosha? Indeed, a national developer. This, according to the Milwaukee Business Journal yesterday, a national developer plans to invest $440 million to build an industrial park expected to create nearly 2,000 new full-time jobs on the site of the former South Hills Country Club in Racine County. It's actually the Village of Caledonia. Florida-based Ashley Capital is working with the village, plans on 10 new buildings that would take up almost 4 million square feet on around 220 acres, according to village documents. After being open for nearly a century, right on 94 there, South Hills Country Club's last day of business was September 30th of last year. I have family in the greater Kenosha area. My parents had their wedding reception at South Hills. So a lot of legacy there, but it's great to see that parcel of land being rebuilt into an office park. His needed space, definitely in that corridor between Milwaukee and Chicago. Really, really important. In the national big food news, Cheez-Its are on the move. Did you know this, Martin?
No, I did not know
this. Oh, here.
I don't believe this, believe it or not, Cheez-Its news is not on my
top of my list
of 100 things I care about.
Okay, all right. Well, hey.
But I'm listening.
Big food. Mars will acquire Kellanova for almost $36 billion in cash, tying together some of the largest U.S. candy and snack brands the company announced yesterday. The M&M owners, that's Mars, it's a private business, is acquiring this Kellogg spinoff for $83.50 per share, according to a news release. The addition of Kellanova, which it was separated from its parent company last year, it's going to bring all of these massive brands underneath the Mars umbrella. Pringles, Cheez-Its, Pop-Tarts.
Jeff, stop. You're making me hungry.
Krispy Kreme. Rice Krispie Treats, Nutri-Grain, and RX Bars. I'm a big fan of the RX Bar.
What's an RX Bar?
RX Bar is really low protein bars, just four ingredients. Really simple.
Sure.
I mean, it's a processed bar,
sure,
but kind of a high-end.
Something you eat on a
really
jog.
Yeah,
or
a morning snack for sure. Also, Kellogg's International Eggo Morningstar brand, all now under one umbrella. Kellanova's sales last year were more than $13 billion. They have presence in 180 different markets and approximately 23,000 employees. You may remember, Martin, I'm going to quiz you here.
Oh,
in 2021, Mars acquired the name of a company that is now known as Colectivo Coffee. What was that name?
Altera. Mars acquired? Really?
Mars acquired the name and some of the business principles and then went back to the ownership group. So Mars acquired the name of Altera, which is now under the Mars brand.
So are all my old Altera shirts worth a lot of money?
Should I be flipping them on Facebook Marketplace? I think you should still wear them with pride, and you should still enjoy Colectivo and Altera coffee, without a doubt. All right. When we come back, Martin has his Milwaukee Brewers shirt on, which is fitting today because they go for the series split with the Dodgers this afternoon with $500 million. How should the Brewers improve American Family Field and the area around it? This is the upswing, the future of almost everything. You're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman, joined by Martin Moore. Steve Glenn had some obligations this morning. He'll be back next Thursday as we do the future of almost everything here on The Upswing. The Milwaukee Brewers are exploring a range of options to upgrade American Family Field and kind of the surrounding areas as the organization looks to enhance, add to its amenities. You probably recall back in December, Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers signed a $500 million American Family Field funding bill, which will keep the team at their current facility and in Milwaukee through 2050. Now, the Brewers are asking fans with a survey that was sent out, I think, to about 36, 37,000 ticket buyers, input on potential stadium upgrades, looking at outdoor spaces, year-round activities, premium seating, parking opportunities. Martin, you look at kind of the center field area outside of American Family Field. You think Milwaukee and the greater Milwaukee area can support another Deer District type area?
Totally, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think there's a lot of Brewers and baseball fans that don't follow basketball or maybe don't live in an area where the Deer District is necessarily accessible to them, or it's not even on their radar. And so I think there's a huge opportunity. For me, the trepidation would be two things. One, getting there. Like, when I think about, I'm a Bucks season ticket holder, when I think about going to Bucks games, and I tell people this all the time, like, it's easy to get into Pfizer Forum. It's easy to get to the Deer District. Parking takes you a couple minutes. You walk there, boom, you're there. Whereas when I think about, like, AmFam Field, logistically, it can be a pain. There's traffic you can get stuck in. It feels like you drive for a mile to get to the parking lot. Then you get to the parking lot.
Obviously, much bigger numbers.
Exactly.
You got 18,000 compared to 43,000. But at the same time, getting in and out of that area is a little bit more of a challenge. And looking at the survey, actually, ballpark ingress and egress in and out of the ballpark is what they're asking fans. They're saying, hey, would you want us to help enhance getting in and out of the ballpark, and what would that look like? I mean, what should that look and feel like?
You know, I'm not a civil engineer, so I have no idea. I'll know it when I see it.
Yeah.
But it definitely, it's not what we currently have. That wouldn't get me to zoom past downtown and make my way to AmFam Field. So that, and then, you know, something like the Deer District, because, you know, we all know how big the parking lot is at AmFam Field. It's massive, and sometimes you can walk 5, 10, 15 minutes to get inside. So is there an opportunity to do something that isn't going to take up space for tailgating?
Yeah.
Like the Deer District, where there's restaurants, there's bars, there's entertainment, stuff for families that you could do out there and utilize that space. Because otherwise, in the off season, it's you're not making money. You're doing nothing. There's, one restaurant in there and Topgolf, and that's it. Like,
and even with the additional dollars to invest, what the team and the organization is looking to do is drive incremental revenue.
Exactly.
So you have to create additional opportunities for fans to engage with the team, to go out there on non-game days and have a good experience.
Huh.
The WTMJ talk and text line is 855-616-1620. As we discuss, I went through the survey and kind of pulled seven ideas that seem to be, you know, emerging from what they're asking of fans. And the proposals kind of on the deck, I'm saying Deer District, Beer District. The Brewers are kind of tentatively saying Brewers Bash. So we could talk a whole lot about
Beer
names.
District.
I like Beer District but it may be too similar to Deer District.
No, that's the
I don't know.
Point.
But you may want Brewers in the name just from a branding standpoint.
Have you snagged the website? BeerDistrict.com
yet? No, I'm going to register.com right now to do it.
Yeah. No, I love that.
So that would be a live entertainment space that would feature year-round activities, you know, some baseball-centric events.
Batting cages,
player meet and greets, sponsor activations, and that type of thing. So seven ideas that I'm extracting here. We'll do a couple here. One is just obviously, first and foremost, what I just said, a year-round entertainment district. A space similar to the Deer District that could host events, outdoor concerts, festivals, community gatherings, kind of making the area a vibrant hub. Does that work in a non
game day and does it work in a non-downtown environment?
I mean, that's a great question, because when you think about the Deer District, it's smack dab in the middle of the city.
Right.
It's very accessible.
There's a certain juice that comes with
exactly.
that, right?
Whereas a beer district, in air quotes, you know, it's not that it's off the beaten path. It's just not as accessible as something like Pfizer Forum in the Deer District. That being said, I think you can do it and present it in a way that makes it accessible, but you got to have the right things. You got to give people a real reason to go there on a weekly basis, not once a month, not every 6 months, not as an anniversary trip, but real things like what they do with Third Street Market Hall,
yeah.
you know, a sports bar where you can, watch other games or
yeah.
I don't know what that looks
and
like.
And they've made so many improvements inside the ballpark. Obviously, the Third Street Market Hall is inside there. That experience, I think, can continue to be enhanced for
totally.
Sure. Enhanced culinary experiences, definitely on
Big
the
time.
List. You know, marquee restaurants that maybe aren't in the market that would be a draw if there isn't a game happening. When we come back, we'll go through the rest of the ideas, get your reaction. What about winterization of the inside of the ballpark, and what type of events could be held if it was warm and cozy all year round inside AmFam Field? This is The Upswing. You're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing, the future of almost everything. Martin Moore, I'm Jeff Sherman. The Milwaukee Brewers, American Family Field, looking at a number of different ways surveying fans to increase not only the fan experience, but to build out a district-type entertainment venue outside of the ballpark. A couple other ideas as I went through the survey. We just talked before the break. Winterization of the indoors to make for concerts during the winter, make it more comfortable fan experience. You on board with that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that would be a reason why I wouldn't want. I already don't like winter and the cold, so going out of my way to continue to be in it. Yeah, I don't know how they winterize it, but
yeah, I mean, obviously they've added some really good team shops and retail opportunities inside the ballpark. Do you think a non-sports retailer could work outside the ballpark? I don't know what that would be.
Sure.
Would people go there to shop if it was unique enough, like an REI or something like that, that isn't, you know, in a 20-mile radius?
Yeah. I mean, if you plopped like an Apple store or something in it. I don't know what that would look like. Mm-hmm. One thing, you know, we were talking about on the break that I think could be really cool is to have some small shop that sold Brewers gear, because if you're going to AmFam, you're going there because you like, you know, baseball, and that sells Brewers gear, but it's you know, stuff that they can work with local artists and make sort of one-off stuff that, you know, maybe they make 1,000 pieces and, mm-hmm. and the only way you're ever going to get it is by going there and getting in line. And I feel like that could be really, really cool.
Yeah.
But I don't, not Brewers gear. I don't
yeah,
know.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. The retail world is
there's options.
So ever evolving.
There's options everywhere on my
yeah.
list of places. I'm going to go to get stuff.
I know. Yeah. So, it's got to be really unique.
Something that Busch Stadium does in St. Louis that really excited me when they built that new stadium is they put a Build-A-Bear workshop there. So you could have a Fred Bird or get a teddy bear and put it in a Cardinals jersey. Maybe that's something you could put in.
Yeah. Those interactive experiences, yeah. I think, is what people expect at a ballpark.
Sure.
So, you know, could you do pickleball courts, camping experiences, hammock parks, you know, that type of thing. Like, hey, you're outside.
Sure.
There's a ball game happening, but I can create and I can be comfortable.
Absolutely. I like that.
And then what do you think about, you know, Brewers kind of been teasing in the survey, like a Brew HQ social patio, integration of kind of modern media experiences, because you're not only watching the game on the field, you're watching it on your phone and your devices. So maybe there's some type of enhanced digital experience.
Apple
that
Vision
you
Pro.
Only get. Yes.
Bunch of VRs.
There's an integrated sponsorship right there.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's definitely opportunities to do stuff like that. It really comes down to, you know, what's the demand for it?
Yeah.
What have you seen work in other markets that maybe you could implement or tweak? But I think it could be cool. For me, the big thing is getting people like me who don't go to a lot of Brewers games every year. When I say not a lot, like two or three,
yeah.
How do you get people like me there? Because that's where the meat and potatoes and the money is going to be.
Yeah. I mean, creating more premium viewing areas, I think, you know, whether it's field level lounges, theater boxes, almost like a movie theater experience, would people be willing to pay an additional fee for that?
Sure.
I think, you know, that's something that's on the table. Shuttles, a big part of the survey is how you get to games. Mm-hmm. Shuttle experience from local bars and clubs and places around the area. That's still, it works really well. But it's just kind of a roundabout.
It is.
And
it
maybe
is.
That could be enhanced with some infrastructure that would make it more of an appealing experience for the fan and also easier in and out for the shuttle workers.
Absolutely. I mean, that's one of my biggest things of not going to Brewers games is it's just so, for me, convoluted and time-consuming and can be frustrating that it keeps me from going.
Yeah. All right. Well, we will see how it all comes together. The Brewers will continue to survey. I'm sure there'll be more news in the very near future. It's exciting to see what development could look like out there. There's a lot of space, obviously.
It's a blank canvas.
It's a blank canvas. It's a big parking area. But people appreciate tailgating, and I think some of the money could be used just to enhance the tailgating experience.
Yes.
Because you got to bring all your stuff. Maybe there's some good ways to higher-end bathrooms, a little bit more infrastructure to really make the tailgating experience unique and more adaptable for the fan.
Ooh, I like that. I like that.
Yes, because we're all bringing our gear and our coolers and our grills. We got to make that easier. All right, when we come back, what streaming services are you subscribing to and why? And how much do they cost? Martin and I are going to go through our bills and try to save you some money. Welcome back to The Upswing, the future of almost everything. Martin Moore joins us today. A little wrap up on our Brewers Beer District conversation from the 262. How about a semi-permanent food truck circuit? You can still use the space for parking if needed, but it provides an opportunity for local businesses to showcase their food. I like it. From the 414, another really good idea, but it's all about infrastructure and probably needs some more dollars. But from the 414, light rail service, especially connecting to the suburbs. The area absolutely needs this to build on sustainability, to get more customers to an entertainment district. The Brewers, the team, the city must be willing to take its hat off an unwelcoming approach, maybe sometimes, to transit. Transit is a solution for congestion. So,
yes, please.
Without a doubt, yes.
I don't think there's anyone in the state of Wisconsin that would kill for some high-speed rail to connect some of these suburbs and cities.
It would be so sweet, wouldn't it? Yeah.
When I go to La Crosse, it takes me longer to take the train than it does to drive there.
Well, hey.
That's not very efficient.
We're going to talk about La Crosse at the end of the show. All right, Martin. So you look at your streaming bill regularly in terms of the services you subscribe to and why and what the costs are all about.
Only when I want to lose sleep.
Oh, man. I mean, it's so interesting to think. Like, families now just have, as we were talking before the show, families now have this new budgeting approach that is all about, you know, what they're spending on their iPhones, what they're spending on their apps, what they're spending on streaming services. And it just continues to grow and grow and grow. But you got to look at it with an approach of, wow, am I using the service? How much am I spending? Our daughter the other day, I got a text. She was at a friend's house. She said she needed Hulu to watch a show.
Needed.
Yes.
Or what was going to happen.
Yeah. So I did the research. We don't have, we're not a Hulu subscriber. But $7.99 per month to get the Hulu with ads. But now they're bundling with so many different other services. $16.99 per month with Disney Plus, Hulu, and Max. $9.99 with Hulu, Disney Plus with ads. $14.99 Hulu, Disney, and ESPN Plus with ads. And then $17.99 now is what Hulu is without ads. That's getting up there. Almost $20 a month for Hulu.
It is. Remember when we all, and it wasn't that long ago, we all were begging for cable to just chop it all up. Let me pick the channels that I want and make it much easier. Did we get that? Is it less convoluted and is it cheaper? I don't know for sure, but I would love to know and hear from someone who has had cable for 20, 30 years or whatever, and now is in streaming? And is your life better? Is it cheaper? Is it less convoluted? Because, boy, I don't know that it is.
Yeah, it's interesting. We still have Spectrum at home.
What?
Yeah, and mainly it's because...
Jeff Sherman.
The internet access is really nice. Okay. We keep it for that. But I just do the basic TV choice. It gives you 15 channels, and I think now it's like $44 a month. Which, if you look at, you do YouTube TV, any of those other options, they're a little bit more expensive. Mm-hmm. And I don't watch hardly any live TV except for sports.
Yeah, I don't
but you
got
to have some basic platform.
Totally.
And that's the tough thing now. Like, if you want to change and adapt, it takes a lot of time and a lot of phone calls and a lot of effort.
Another thing that, you know, we were talking about before the show and we were sort of game planning was just the bills that families have and individuals have now that didn't exist 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago. Like, you didn't have a cell phone plan. You didn't have an internet plan. You didn't have all these streaming services and cable. It's kind of crazy when you think about the bills that you have and how much money you're spending on things that just didn't exist, you know, 30, 40 years ago. And you can see why some people are starting to drop some of these streaming services and try and lighten the wallet a little bit.
And you know, also on the internet access side, there's just not a ton of options.
No.
There's one or two main players and they're about the same price. And maybe you're going to save by going to fiber from a bigger company like AT&T.
Right.
And they're going to give you a $150 gift card to do so. But then you got to go back to your current provider, and it's a lot of rigmarole to get to.
I don't have any supporting evidence for this, but I'm pretty convinced that everybody does this thing where it's like every 5 years they just back and forth bounce between like internet providers.
Yeah.
Well, at least I do. Maybe I'm projecting.
No matter what, I take a stock of all your existing subscriptions, all your streaming services, and budget what you're spending each and every month.
What do you spend?
I'm guessing it's going to be more than you expect. I think we're at about $139 a month for Spectrum with everything, which isn't...
Are you talking about internet too?
Internet, and then their basic 15 plan.
Gotcha. So we're about the same. We're probably about $130 with our internet and then Disney Plus,
but
Apple
then I
TV,
add
Netflix.
HBO, then I add Showtime and some of the other things, and that's another 10.
You don't get free HBO? AT&T, free HBO with our cell phone
plan. Okay, now I got to change. All right. There it is. That's why we have Martin Moore for the future of almost everything, adapting to my family budget as we go. Speaking of family budget, back to school shopping. What it looks like, has it changed? And what are the options out there for families? This is The Upswing, and you're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing, the future of almost everything. Martin Moore joins us, as always, on Thursdays. What does back-to-school shopping look like in your household, and how has it changed through the years? Total U.S. back-to-school sales will reach almost $82 billion this year, a 3.2% increase from last year. A lot of growth there, according to eMarketer. Families with children in elementary through high school plan to spend an average of almost $875 on clothing, shoes, school supplies, electronics, all that stuff. It's a little less than last year, but that's still a big portion of the family budget.
Especially if you got 2, 3, 4 kids. That's a lot. So I have a question for the listeners.
Yes.
How much more expensive? I suppose you would have to have a kid that's like now that's like going to graduate high school. How much more expensive has back to school shopping gotten? Like, are there electronics and things that like didn't exist back when your kids were, you know, 5, 6, 7 years old? And, you know, is it just more expensive now than it used to be? Or is it relatively the same price?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, a lot of the devices are handled, depending on your school size, internally by the school district. So you get your laptop, you get your iPad, you get that as part of your school fees. I think the backpacks, the lunch containers,
sure,
you know, that kind of stuff has upscaled so much in the last couple of years.
I bet.
That's getting more and more expensive. It's not a brown bag for 4 cents.
Right.
It's the right lunch container for $49.99. So it's
Trapper,
that type
of thing.
Are
Keeper still a thing?
Trapper, still you know, binders are still a thing. It's interesting. Our school system does
school toolboxes that make it really easy on the elementary school level through the parent teacher organization, through the PTO. I'm like thinking about, I think it was $52.
That's not bad.
For 4K students. You get your folders, you get the binders, you get the Kleenex, you get the wipes, you get all the things that are on the list, but it just comes to your doorstep and then you give it to your child and bring it to school. Like, I'm all about convenience. I know Amazon has curated some of those lists too. So I'm a big fan of just curating the list, letting the school take care of it or letting the platform take care
Absolutely.
Of it.
Absolutely. I think that's a great idea. Turn it into a another subscription service.
Exactly. And then you get the email for the next year. Yeah.
And you just up the price by $2.99 like Netflix does. And
yeah. I mean, but there's still that experience of going to the store and picking out things with your child that I totally. Think, you know, the majority of U.S. back-to-school sales take places in store still, like 65%.
I can
so,
see that.
You know, you look at the Targets of the world like that, they want to optimize that experience.
I mean, I think too, if you're a kid, you're already not particularly thrilled about going back to school. So the one little ray of hope is that you get to pick out like your own folders and pencils and clothing. And at right. least it gives you some sort of excitement for going back to school, even if right. it only lasts like a fleeting moment.
Your own paint, your own notebooks, the exactly. right colors, the right things that are going to look really good in that.
If pink's your favorite color like mine, and then you get, you know, green colored or salmon colored folders, you might be a little disappointed.
All right. More money talk when we come back. Why do you live where you live? And do lists and rankings matter? Money Magazine is out with a new list of best places to live in the area. One Wisconsin city made this list. This is the future of almost everything. You're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman, joined by Martin Moore for the future of almost everything today on the big show. So many talking text line calls and comments coming in. I don't have time to do them all, but I do have time to do a gift card giveaway for the Mineshaft restaurant in either Hartford or Oshkosh. Sherman family, we live in the North Shore. We want to get the kids out of our attic, away from that Xbox, get them into the $2 million game room at the Mineshaft in Hartford. It's an easy drive for us, not too far. Really great pizza. I love sitting at the bar. We can have a drink. Know the kids can go up in the game room. Have a good time. Hang out. Caller number 7 at 855-616-1620 gets a gift card to the historic Mineshaft. And a friendly reminder, today, Thursdays, feature buy one, get one free pizza. Martin, Money Magazine is out with its new list of the 50 best places to live in the United States. Its metrics to arrive at this, they don't rank it 1 to 50. They just announce 50 okay. locations. So the metrics, the health of the local job market, the average housing cost borne by homeowners and renters, percentage of residents in poverty, the quality of public schools, thoughtful policy, civic engagement, and community spirit. Milwaukee, our Money Magazine says the best places to live are resilient, unique, and economically thriving.
Mm.
La Crosse made the list of their top 50.
I know a little bit about La Crosse, yeah? Wisconsin.
Would you move there?
I mean, I love Milwaukee too much, so yeah. the answer is okay. no. Right. I mean, if like my entire family moved to La Crosse, sure, then maybe I would. But
yeah.
No.
All right. Well, some of the others on the list, Atlanta, Eugene, Oregon, Boise, Detroit.
Really?
Detroit, the comeback city.
Yeah.
Without a
good
doubt.
For them.
And Kalamazoo. Ooh, Kalamazoo, Kalamazoo, Detroit, nice. La Crosse were kind of the three in the greater Midwest area.
Sure. I'd love to know all of them, to be honest. As someone yeah. who's been to all 50 states and virtually every major city,
yeah.
I need to look up this list and see what else is on there.
Well, why do you ultimately choose to live where you live? Do you think these kind of lists and rankings matter as people are looking at, hey, what are my options? What matters most to you?
Sure. I mean, yeah, it depends on the individual and the family. You know, for me, school system, obviously not having kids, my wife and I, it doesn't really matter. So I don't really care. But, you know, for some people, that's the main reason why they move to a community is for the school system. For other people, they might be younger and they want entertainment. They want access to restaurants and bars and things to do. For other people like me who are, you know, sort of middle-aged, you know, I want somewhere that's close to downtown where everything is, but I want to be just far enough away, but be in a community where I can, you know, be friendly with neighbors and it's safe and accessible to things. And so I think it looks a little bit different for everybody. Mm-hmm. But I think there are some things that are ubiquitous, just that the city and the community you're in is growing and, you know, the neighbors are great and it's just got a real sense of community. I think those things.
And that's a hard thing to gauge and put on a ranking, right. But obviously, you know, entities like Money Magazine are trying to do that by publishing these lists and give people a sense of, hey, this is what community looks and feels like. You should check out this city when you're evaluating your different options.
Sure.
And, I think the school thing that you mentioned, you know, schools are not only important to parents, but I think they're important to the entire community because if you're raising good, strong kids in a strong environment, you hope that they stay there. And when they move away, you hope that they move back.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's mainly because of the infrastructure around education.
Absolutely. I mean, education is, it still, in my opinion, is just an underrated metric for how a little human being is going to develop and participate in the human experience in their community. And, you know, the more they have a more positive experience as they're growing up and going to school, the better chances are they're going to have a positive impact on the world. And so, I mean, schools is a huge thing for where someone wants to live.